Welcome to the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast. Here, we speak with extraordinary games industry professionals and listen to their story to learn all about what they've built and who they are. GamesNet Berlin Europe is the international games industry initiative of MediaNet Berlin Brandenburg, the networking association for the media, creative and digital industries in Germany's capital region. My name is Simon Oler, and I will be your host for this program. Today, we are speaking with Daniel Stammler. He is the co-founder of the investment firm BLN Capital, together with his two co-founders, Janosch Kühn and Oliver Löffler. Although these guys are most well known for being the founders of Kolibri Games, with their hit game Idle Miner Tycoon. And they did have an exit with Kolibri Games and sold to Ubisoft for over 100 million euros. Not bad. And now the three also released a book. It's called Mach kein Quatsch in German, which roughly translates to Don't Be Naive. And that's what our conversation is about today. It's about being courageous enough to start a startup, not thinking everything through to the end, kind of going for it courageously while also being pragmatic, while keeping to the essentials. And I'll leave it at that. And you can listen to the rest because I want to keep this intro essential. So that's what you're getting today. It was a great conversation, very inspiring. I have to go and take some notes because I am inspired. So I hope you'll have the same. Please sit back, relax, and enjoy our conversation with Daniel Stammler.
Hello and welcome to the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast. With me is my co-host Simon, as always. Hello, Simon.
Hello and good day to you.
Today we have a very interesting guest. His name is Daniel Stammler. Currently, he owns the investment firm BLN Capital together with his two co-founders Janosch Kühn and Oliver Löffler here in Berlin. Although they are more well known for being the founders of Kolibri Games with the hit game Idle Miner Tycoon, which they exited in 2021 and sold to Ubisoft for over 100 million euros. Now the three also released a book, Mach kein Quatsch, which translate to Don't Be Silly. We want to know how this eventful career started, what drove Daniel and his co-founders, and what his future plans are. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Tell us something that is important to you right now.
Ooh, that's already a tough question to start. So right now it's important for me to support the gaming ecosystem because I think it's going through a tough time with like the Apple changes and the overall economic situation. So that's my main focus right now.
Mm-hmm. I have a question in between. How would you translate Mach kein Quatsch to English?
So probably more like don't do weird things.
Don't do weird things. Don't do stupid things, maybe?
Or don't do stupid things, yeah.
Okay, I was just curious. Don't be silly is also nice, but was wondering how the spirit is for you. Okay.
Let's start maybe from the beginning. And the beginning is in quotes. Tell us how Kolibri and you three founders started your journey.
So where to start? We all studied in Karlsruhe at the Karlsruhe University, KIT. And basically from our beginnings of our studies, we always wanted to build something up. We always wanted to start a startup, start some projects independently of each other. So back in the beginning, we didn't even know each other that well. But they all failed. So we had no idea how to build a business. We had no idea how to build a company, but we just got better every time. We learned from all our failures. And then eventually we decided that we want to start something again. It was Janosch, Oliver, Tim, Sebastian, and me. So basically five co-founders back then. And we decided that we want to go into gaming. And this was all still back in Karlsruhe out of our student apartment.
Mm-hmm. And from that, I take it that gaming wasn't really your only focus. from how I got to know you, and I just recently went through my photos, like not connected to this at all, but I was going through old photos from me at conventions, and I actually saw that there were photos where I was at a booth standing there, like promoting our game back then, and you were in the background talking to somebody. So I thought, oh, well, we've been in the same orbit at least for, I don't know, 7 years-ish. But so that was an event in Berlin. In the beginning, you sound more like somebody who's a founder, not specifically a game studio founder. Is that correct?
The key to success for us was that we are both. So we really, really liked playing games. During our childhood, we played a lot of games. I personally played mostly strategy games. And during our studies, we then switched to mobile games like Clash of Clans and Candy Crush. So we were always familiar with playing games. But we came from South Germany, and it's super conservative there. And for us, like, we never even thought about the fact that games is a real business. So for us, like, it seemed more like it's kind of like a hobby and you can't really build a company out of it. Once we realized, we basically just Googled how much money does Clash of Clans make, and we learned that they're making $1 billion per year. And then we realized that this is the perfect way for us. We, as you said, like, we are founders, we like entrepreneurs, we like building things up, but at the same time, we also love games. And the combination of it, building a product that we really understand, that we have a passion for, while still being like rational about the business aspects, rational about building a company, about earning money. And I think this combination made Kolibri Games successful.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about maybe examples of things that you started before you started a game startup?
Sure. So the biggest example, or the one where I spent most time on, was Tibuga. It was basically a job platform like Indeed or Monster or all of those. Mm-hmm. And we actually spent like over a year building it. However, we were really naive back then. So I think I was like 22 or so. And I had some business partners that were more on the business side. I was mainly doing like the IT side. And yeah, we basically thought, let's just build a great product. And if we have a great product, then our customers will come. However, as it turned out, they did not come. And we didn't even know about performance marketing back then. Now, in hindsight, I think if we would have had knowledge about performance marketing, Facebook marketing, and so on, maybe it could have been successful. But we built a nice product, and in the end, nobody used it. So basically, this was very devastating. And at the same time, our biggest learning that we should not just focus on building a product, but that the marketing side is equally as important.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something that can be very well translated to the games industry as well, because I think this is a point that I come back to a lot. There are tons of studios who think about creating a game. And I think in that regard, there are still also many studios who don't even think of a game as a product. So they think about it as an experience for a player, which of course it is, but it's another step to think of it as a product that needs to be marketed, and then also thinking about a framework for that, a company for that, or something that brings you beyond that project. So that's something that we often have as a point here on the podcast. And I think your mindset is what makes you interesting, at least to me, but also obviously successful, because your mindset, I would describe it more like that of a startup founder in general, which maybe from the tech world or whatever, but it is very different to the usual, let's say, German indie mindset that I have spent a lot of time around. Do you see it the same?
Yeah, I see it very much the same way. And unfortunately, I meet so many indie developers that build great products, but don't think about how to get players in the end. And that's such a, like, it's so sad if you see a great game and you know there will maybe be like 500 people in the world playing the game because there's no viable marketing strategy behind that. And I think this is also one of the biggest weaknesses of German's games industry. If you look, for example, towards like Turkey or towards Helsinki, they really think much more in terms of like free to play, in terms of like, how can you actually build a game that you can monetize and spend marketing money on to get it big. Whereas in Germany, I think there are a lot of indie developers that have a dream of a certain game, and that game might be great, but if you don't think about how to market it or how to earn money with it, then that dream will basically never reach many players.
And so I'm curious, what would you say to somebody who has a game, and I would posit it as such that, let's say, maybe they're an artist, right? They're, you know, we can kind of like do the spectrum of artist and business a little bit. And we're kind of talking about the business side, and then the artist or the designer, the product maker has the great product, you know? And if you go into any of the extremes, you know, on the business side, then you have no soul, and on the artist side, you have no customers or players or whatever. If you agree with that, what would you say to somebody who is an artist, somebody who has a great vision, a great game in mind, but maybe has this kind of, doesn't have this feeling of, yeah, I don't, you know, the game stands for itself, the art stands for itself, I don't need to promote my game. How can we reach them and suggest to them, with which words would you say, hey, market your game? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I think the first or the important thing is to make it obvious to them, for example, by showing them other games, or you can just scroll through the top downloaded games list or whatever. There are rarely any successful games that don't have this commercial aspect to them. And once in a while, there's a breakout hit from some indie studio that suddenly becomes super successful, like Valheim, for example. But this is really, 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 really rare, whereas there are thousands of indie developers that try to build such games. I think it's important to just not be naive, because we all love games, and you need a great game, as you said. You can't just come at it from like the pure business perspective, because this usually doesn't work. Because it needs a soul, it needs to be creative, it needs to be somewhat innovative, but at the same time, it also needs to be able to earn money. And speaking about indie games, for example, there's this clear trend towards free-to-play, and if you don't follow this trend, it's really, really hard to make any money, just alone to survive or to be able to pay yourself a salary that pays your rent and your food. This is really hard if you just think of like premium titles. And especially, so what I find really sad is if the reason why they do this is just pure ideology, because they themselves don't like free to play. So then they decide on a premium game, even though it could be a great free to play game.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. Me personally, I always try to think of a game also on how to market it, although I am not an experienced free-to-play person, because the studios I worked at never really did free-to-play. But I think this is really a point that stands for itself. Look at the market for your game and how to market it and how to monetize it as well. So could be free to play, could be premium. Obviously also depends on the platform as well, but always have that in mind in general when you approach the game or when you start the development, not only afterwards.
Yeah, so if there's one thing that I could just give or say in general, to build free to play mobile games, because that's the easiest way to get into gaming. Because building a premium PC game also sounds nice, but it's so much more work. And then in the end, there's no real easy way to do marketing for premium on PC. So basically, even if you have a great game, your journey will probably end there. If you have a great game on mobile, there's a realistic chance that you can run some Facebook campaigns and get your first downloads profitable.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm really curious. Maybe we can get into your history or your philosophy there a bit further, because you guys, obviously, I think most people know that, but you sold your company to Ubisoft, and for an amazing price tag, I think a record-breaking sum in the German market. And you wrote a book now, and it's like, and maybe the translation of "Mach keinen Quatsch" is really something like, don't be naive or something, because I've heard you say naive a lot now, and also in
a good point.
And maybe we can get into that. So I'm also personally very curious about that, because I'm a bit of a, I wouldn't say ideologist, but sometimes an idealist. And so maybe tell us a bit about, I guess, what happened to you since, why you decided to write this book, what's in there. And maybe start with, well, what does it mean for you to be naive or to have been naive, which I guess in your own story you are now not anymore. So I'm very curious about this general line.
So it's a broad question.
It is. We do that.
But to give you one example, one thing we did after we decided to go into mobile gaming, we just said we are going to play the top 200 successful mobile games. We're going to play all of them. Of course, some for longer, some for shorter, but we knew all top games on the mobile market. And just by doing so, I had the feeling that we had a huge advantage against a lot of other developers that don't even play the big successful games. And if you basically don't play those games, it's kind of like keeping your eyes closed and walking through the world, because, and this is kind of naive, I think, because you need to realize what kind of games are successful and what kind of games are not successful. So that's one example where you shouldn't be naive and where you should just look at the world, look at what people are playing, and then do or learn from that. Of course, if you do the exact same thing, you will also not be successful, because then there's probably somebody who already did it better. You need to be innovative. You need to learn from what's out there, but you also can't just say, I don't care what's happening in the world. I will just build my premium mobile game, and because I hate free-to-play and I think it will be successful, because it will not be successful then.
Okay, so that's one way that in which you guys eliminated your naivete, it's about recognizing what's happening in the world, what people are actually interested in, something in the direction of product market fit. What are other ways in which you would say, you know, don't be naive? So, or
I think one other way is on like how to build the company. And there are some people that think if you do a 4-day work week, it will be more effective than a 5-day work week. And then, and things along those lines. I think in the end, to be successful as a company, there's no easy way. You need to work hard, and you need a team that works hard, works focused, works well together. And there's no shortcut for it. And I think this is also sometimes a bit naive if you think that you just hire like a good game designer, and that game designer will build will basically build you the next Clash of Clans. Doesn't work that way. You need great people, but in the end, you also need to work yourself, and you need to build a great team that works well together. But it's not all like easy peasy lemon squeezy. You sometimes need to. One good example is, so the first time we had to let go of somebody in the team, it was really hard for us because we of course never did it before. There's also, I think I'm writing about this in the book as well, about this experience, where at some point it became clear to us we need to let go of this person, but we didn't know how to do it. And we, of course, talked to some people, but then again, you only know it from watching American TV series. And basically, we were super hard to him. We told him, like, hey, and the reasons why we did this were the right reasons. But the way how we did this was a bit too harsh, I would say, because we basically told him, okay, you need to get out now and, no, and here's your stuff, please leave, which in hindsight was way too harsh. But at the same time, it's, and I learned a lot from that, but at the same time, it's also naive if you think that, like, your team members can never do anything wrong and it's always the fault of the company. Sometimes you need to let go of people. Some people just don't fit into your culture, or some people are just not good enough. So I think that's also really, really important to be aware of, that it's still a company, it's still a business, and you always need to do the best for the business and not the best for, like, some individuals.
Right. Yeah. That's like, I feel like I have this feeling when I talk to you or listen to you, you really, you had this extra game, you know, you like this whole thing of building this company is like another game that you guys were playing, kind of.
I mean, it's a bit similar. I guess that's also why I always liked to play simulation strategy games or idle games, because it's all about building something valuable up. And this feeling of, like, what to do next, how to basically optimize our company, how to increase the efficiency in the teams, how to make sure that people are happy in the company. So at Colibri Games, this was always our first priority, to make sure that the team overall is happy, because I think that's the only way how to be really, really good at what you're doing. But yeah, it's kind of like, it's, I guess it's similar to a management game, basically, because it is in the end management, but just not a game, but real life. So this also means that your consequences, like as I said earlier, if you do some mistakes, they are much, much harder than in a game.
Yeah, bad.
So basically, it's not like an idle game, because you always need to do something, and it's really punishing if you do the wrong thing.
Yeah. And being idle is not exactly the rewarding thing. I want to do one more follow-up. I know Florian has some product questions for you as well. One more time, how did you get to, like, what was maybe your intention with the book, with this title as well? I think it's so funny, you know, it's not exactly the game, the title you would imagine, that contains a story of, you know, three founders that had 100 million exit, you know. It's like, it's kind of funny. Mach keinen Quatsch. What's that for? Why is that the most important thing to you? How do you mean that as well?
The reason why we wrote this book was because we ourselves had to learn so many things so fast, because we started the company in 2016, and since then everything, like, grew so fast, and we had to learn really fast. One way how we did learn was by reading a lot of books, and the books that we liked most were basically books about other startups. And one thing that we realized over the years, and we are still today reading a lot of books, one thing we realized is that most of those books are about American companies. And rarely they're, like, maybe if even a handful of books about German startups. And so we thought we should write a book about how to build a company in Germany, because, like, all these American examples, you can, of course, read the story about how Apple was started or about how Alibaba in China started, but I think they are not relatable. And at the same time, I think that in Germany, we need more startups, both in the gaming and not in the gaming scene. And our idea was to basically write a book that would have helped us back then, a book that we would have liked to read back then. And this I think we achieved this by sharing our story, by also making sure that we're not only sharing, like, all the nice things, but also talking about the things that didn't go well, the things that, or how we felt during the process. So it's not always easy. And this was the main intention, to write a book that we would have liked to read. Now, about the title, we didn't have a title in the beginning, so the title, we basically came more or less at the end. And our publisher realized that we're, like what you said with the word naive, that we talked a lot about, like, that somebody wanted to do some weird things, or like, mach kein Quatsch. And it turned out that this is one of our key principles of how we ran the company. So to give you an example, Idle Mind Tycoon, back then when we released, it was a super small game. It was Like you could play it for 2 or 3 days and then you were done with the content and there were not a lot of functions and so on because we built it in 2 months and it was only the MVP. But back even then, a lot of people told us like, hey, you should build new games because who knows how big this one game can become. And you should do this and you should do that and you should diversify. And then later on, people told us, what about AR? What about VR? Like there are so many opportunities that we could have done as a company. However, for us, it was always clear, like we will just focus on the next update. We did one update per week. And so basically, this was our key reason for why Idlemind became the success that it is today, because we just kept our heads down, didn't do any weird things on the side, didn't do anything that didn't directly contribute to Idlemind Tycoon. We also built a second game, Idle Factory Tycoon, but this was a smaller team, and just kept our heads down while there were more and more opportunities. And also, so for example, the team members, after 2-3 years working on the same product, of course, they wanted to do something new, something cool, but we knew that this is not the right thing for the company. For the company, it's the best to just focus and do the things that we are best at. So long story short, but basically, mach kein Quatsch was our mindset during those times, to just focus, do the obvious things, do the things that are like, yeah, just do the next steps that you know will make the game better and do those things for years.
Mm-hmm. What I was interested in when I go to, or yeah, when I went to a lot of conferences in the past, there were always these, let's say Pocket Gamer Helsinki or whatever. There were always these talks about obviously how can you make a successful game? And obviously they vary in terms of how they go, but because there are so many ways to success, but especially in the northern countries, there was the example of Angry Birds. And then there was this like myth, but also which people around the conference always talked about, but which was also obviously the truth, that the founders, you see that one specific product that made it and that is really successful. But obviously there are many products that, or many games that come before that successful game. So what I was interested in is, was Idle Miner Tycoon your first attempt at a game, or did you have many tries before, and or how many did you have before?
So we had one try before. It was a game where we tried to like have a fight of cats versus dogs, but it was 10 versus 10 multiplayer. It was the first game that we ever built. So only Tim was the only one who ever even like worked with Unity before. So basically, as you can imagine, this game was way too big for us. And we did it like the wrong way. We did waterfall. So which means that we built functions that like would have only occurred after a year of playing the game and so on. So we had like, a huge project plan, like all those things that you should not do. And then like 6 months later or so, we realized, and somebody out of the gaming industry also told us that this game is shit and this game will never be successful. It was quite harsh, but I think if you wouldn't have said it that way, that we wouldn't be here today where we are. And then we realized, okay, he's right. This game is not a good game. We basically had no idea what we're doing. 10 versus 10 multiplayer is way too big. It was way too complex. So we, Stan sat down, but by this time, so it was roughly 6 months. As I said earlier, we played all the games. We knew what's going on in mobile. We knew all the trends. And then we were able to really think about what we want to do next and to really like combine basically the product feeling aspects with the reality of what we thought the market wants and build Idle Miner Tycoon. And Idle Miner Tycoon is a, so our thinking back then was there were some other idle games like Tap Titans, Adventure Capitalist, but they were all really niche. Like Tap Titans is so dark. Adventure Capitalist is kind of like nerdy, I would say, with like the numbers. And we really didn't understand why there's no idle game which is casual while still having the depth of a good idle game. And at the same time having like the world building elements of building up your world, so like Clash of Clans, so that you can play it for years. And we didn't understand why there's no such game. So we thought, okay, let's try this out. And then, of course, we got very lucky. I think it's also important to always be aware that luck plays an important role in success in gaming. But we did get lucky. Our hypothesis was right. And Idlemer Tycoon actually, it worked really well. And people out there really wanted this kind of like casual idle game with deep gameplay mechanics.
So you told us that you were five in the beginning, and then we know of the three who are now also part of BLN Capital. Can you tell us a little bit about, because you are so process focused, like how was your, or how is your team made up? Like who takes over what role? Are people specialized in different things? Or, yeah, can you describe how you work together?
Yeah, so as you said, we're five co-founders. Janusz and I were kind of like the business people. So we both did write some code, but probably not good code. And the other three is Tim, Sebastian, and Oliver. They were computer scientists, so they were only coding, basically. And they also had some differentiation, so Sebastian back then did more of like the back-end stuff. Tim was more the front-end guy and Oliver more the architecture guy. But after 2 years, Tim and Sebastian realized that they want to do something different in life and want to focus more on family and so on. And of course, as you can imagine, it was quite stressful for us. And we were also luckily in a position where we didn't have any investors. So we found a good solution with which we were all happy. And from then on, the journey continued with us three. And between us three, so Oliver, of course, didn't take care of like the technical aspects of the company. So he was CTO. Janusz and I, as co-CEOs, are still super close. So for us, we, of course, like we had different focus areas. So Janusz was more focused on marketing and art and those things. I was more focused on like product and the mechanics behind the product. But in the end, like all important decisions were made by us three together. And it's still to this day. Now with BLN Capital, of course, it's a different setting. We're an investment firm, so there's no like CTO or anything anymore. But we still do all the important things, all the important decisions together.
Mm-hmm. And you told us that you started out in Karlsruhe. And one of the events I remember, like where I met you in person for the first time, where we exchanged business cards back then, was at an event here in Berlin in the summer, I think, of 2017. And that was when you were contemplating of moving the company and obviously everybody like with the company. At what stage was your company back then, and why did you decide you needed to make a move?
So in 2016, we founded the company in February 2016, then released Idlemer Tycoon in summer 2016. And then basically during the year, it became clear that this game has the potential to be successful. We were still enrolled in our master's at university. So basically 2017 then was the year where we became a real company. Mm-hmm. And one part of becoming a real company was hiring people. And I think we hired like the first 5-6 people. And then we realized, for us, it was always clear. We want to build a big company, a successful company, an international company. And then we started trying to hire people from San Francisco, from London, from everywhere in the world. And we realized that it's really, really hard to get them to move to Karlsruhe, because Karlsruhe is like a small, or it's a medium-sized city, but it's very German, not really international. And then it became clear that we need to move. And we thought about moving to Munich, maybe Frankfurt, but in the end it was clear that that Berlin is the right decision with like the startup ecosystem. And then, as you said, like we were already a lot of times in Berlin at events, because Berlin is in Germany, the startup hub. So yeah, then we decided to move. But at the time we already had quite some people and we hired more people over the year. So at the end of the year, when we actually moved end of 2017, we were like 35 people or so. I think three of them stayed in Karlsruhe because they had family and so on there. But most people actually moved with us. However, to be fair, most of them already knew when they started that we're going to move to Berlin. And for a lot of them, it was the, like, they only joined us because they knew that we're going to move to Berlin.
Ah, I see. So, yeah. During that time, when you moved to Berlin, we also referred to your company under the name that it is mostly known, but you also had a name change. Are we allowed to say the initial name?
Of course.
So you started out as Fluffy Fairy Games, which is obviously a very different name than Colibri Games. What made you do the rebrand?
So to understand the rebrand, it's important to understand why we were called Fluffy Fairy Games. And so basically when we started, it became clear, okay, we need a company to actually start doing business. And to have a company, you need a name. But back then it was still with our first game and we didn't really have an idea for a name. So we went online worked with some name generators and it was our goal back then was to have like a easygoing, funny, recognizable name. And out there came Fluffy Fairy Games. However, we also realized then after like a few months or a year or so that this is not a good name for the company that we were, because it basically had nothing in common with who we are as a company. It was just a random name. So then we decided, okay, we need to rename the company. It actually took us 1 year, I think roughly, from the decision to actually rename it. We worked with different agencies. We were always not happy with the name. So I think this was probably the longest task that we had in the company's history. But we also wanted to do it right, because if you change your name and then everybody thinks your old name was better, then you didn't do a good job. And it was also clear that there's only one change that we can make. Whereas on the product, you do update after update after update, you can fix some things later. With the name change, you can't. And I think Colibri Games was still a really good name, because it really fits kind of like the sentiment of the company. It's a nice name. It's very accessible. It represents the bird, like the hummingbird, which is one of the most agile bird in the world. So it really fits to us as a company.
Yeah, I would agree. So Berlin didn't also always bring you good things, because I read in the description of your book that your office got robbed twice, not only once.
Yeah, that's true.
As somebody whose home got broken into recently, I can imagine that wasn't a very pleasant happening. And then it happened twice. So how did that, like, I think I'm going towards the money line in general, but how did that impact the company in that early stage?
So basically, it wasn't that bad, because luckily we were in a good financial situation. What happened was the first time we moved to Berlin, and I think 2 weeks or 3 weeks after we moved here, I was coming in the office on a Saturday morning, and I was a bit old school, so I had I still had a desktop PC. I also had a laptop, so I had this desktop PC and I was just like working in the morning. Then Janusz came in. Janusz was like, "Hey, my laptop is gone." And I'm like, "Yeah, whatever, dude. Maybe you forgot it at home or something." And then he was like, no, it was really here. And then we started looking around and then we realized that like all the things were gone. And just not my desktop PC, because I guess it was too heavy to steal. But this was like a Saturday morning. And
same here.
Yeah, and then we were like, fuck, what should we do now? And we then called the police, of course, and so on. The police was basically not of a big help, and they couldn't do anything. So then we got some people together and went out into the stores and bought, I think back, like we were like 35 people or so then. And so we bought, and so some of them had their stuff with them over the weekend at home. and not in the office. But yeah, we then probably got out and bought like 20 new laptops and a lot of test devices, because we had obviously, as game developers, we had a lot of test devices there. It sucked, but we went on. And then this was in the WeWorks, so shared office space. Then we moved to our real office, and there we had like proper doors and so on. And then like a few months later, I also came in the morning. I think it was a weekday then. And I realized that we got broken into, and this time they really like broke up the door with heavy force, and all the devices were gone again. And I think the second time it was actually like devices worth like 150,000 euros. So it was quite a lot of money. And but we again couldn't do anything. And then afterwards we really built kind of like a high security office there with like multiple doors and alarm systems and everything that you can do. Because we thought, okay, this is the second time now within half a year, so we need to level up. And of course, for us coming from Karlsruhe, I think in Karlsruhe we didn't even close the office door properly, because there are no break-ins. So, I guess that we were a bit naive there.
Yeah, mach keinen Quatsch. it's insane to me that how, as a company that must like be a huge impact for you. I mean, what's interesting is, or what I'm wondering now, since you mentioned it before that luckily you had no investors, at that point, maybe, yeah, tell us, at what point did you start taking in external money, or how did you come up with your initial money? Was it from previous foundings, or how did you get the company rolling? Because you told us that you wanted to hire people from San Francisco. You did an office move. You were already up to 30, 35 people. So at what point, like, was it all like the luck of the release and then you had the money from your own earnings, or how did this start?
So basically, yes, it was all Idle Money Tycoon's earnings. So when we started, we talked to some investors, but nobody wanted to give those five guys out of uni that never built a game before any money. So we decided we have to start on our own. And the good thing is, so we, Janos and I then for the company basically moved in one student apartment, or in one apartment with three rooms. One room was Janos' room, one was mine, and then we had a big living room. It was quite a cheap apartment. It was also really not a good apartment, but we had some extra space. And then we just started working there, so we had basically no costs. Of course, like we are still at uni, so our parents supported us. We had like some jobs on the side to just basically pay the rent and pay the bills, but there were no huge costs. And then we built Idle Money Tycoon, released Idle Money Tycoon, and luckily we got some organic traction. So we got some downloads. In the beginning, we got a few hundred downloads per day. And then later on, I think it went to a few thousand downloads per day without spending money for marketing. And with this money, then we were able to build up the company, hire people, and so on. And yeah, we never got to the other question. We never had any external money. So in the beginning, nobody wanted to give us any money. And then later on, we didn't need it, because Idle Money Tycoon as a game was quite successful and is still quite successful.
Mm. And since you are now investors yourself, I imagine you took the learnings from your very early investor talks, but also, of course, from then the exit of your own company. Can you tell us a little bit about those early talks with investors? I assume you had, from the mindset that you are sharing with us, I assume you had this as a very early goal, maybe finding investors, or was that something... Let's say, how would you have handled this situation if Idle Money Tycoon wasn't successful? Like, was it always the plan to get external money in?
Not really. I mean, we tried, and it would have been nice. Also, we would have liked to have somebody out of the gaming industry, because we had no idea, basically, about how the gaming industry works. But at some point, we had to realize it's not going to happen. And to be honest, like, if a team of five dudes that never built a game and never had any other success in their business lives comes to us now and wants money for for an idea, it's really, really hard, because there are, like, we were one of the successful teams, but there are so many teams, and it's extremely hard to invest in a team with no experience and no success. Like, how do you differentiate then? So I can understand why they didn't want to invest, because there was basically no reason to invest in us.
Yeah, I see. So, yeah, let's talk a little bit about you as an investor. But first, I have one more question for you as a company owner or gaming studio owner. How does one sell a company?
So the way how we sold a company was by working together with an investment bank in gaming in Europe. Areem is the biggest investment bank, and their only task is to sell companies. So they do this all the time. Most bigger European exits were done by them or by a similar firm. And the reason for that is that as a founder, you most likely never sold a company before. So you have no idea how this works. You have no idea how the negotiations work. And at the same time, you want to focus on running the company, making sure that the company works well instead of like sitting in negotiations all the time. So basically the investment bank organizes the process, organizes the meetings. And then in the end, long story short, we found Ubisoft, and we're super happy with Ubisoft. They made a good offer, which is of course important, but at the same time, they also clicked personally. They are like from close by from Paris, so it's very easy to go there. I had a feeling they had the same long-term vision for the game. They promised us and kept this promise that Colibri Games will run as an independent company. So yeah, basically then we found the perfect partner for us and went with it. But of course, like one thing that's really important is we didn't have to sell the company, because if we would not have been happy with the offers or the partners, we could have just continued. And this, of course, gives you a position of strength. If you need to sell the company because you're losing money or whatever, then I think it's really, really hard to sell.
Mm-hmm. But was it always your goal to sell in the end, just to have that exit, or was it that came over time?
So it was basically kind of clear that this will happen, because like for us, this is how most companies work. And to give you one example, we had every full-time employee had shares in the company, and by giving them shares, it's basically also the promise that those shares will eventually become worth something. Mm-hmm. So it was clear that the company will eventually be sold when it's the right time. But it wasn't like we did everything to sell the company, so our focus was to build a great company. It was clear to us that if we have a great successful company, then most likely somebody wants to work with us.
Mm. Was it also a deciding factor or a positive factor for you that Ubisoft also has offices in Germany and specifically in Berlin?
So we are mobile, and the Ubisoft Germany teams are focusing on PC console. So we're not interacting with them on like a day-to-day base. Colibri, of course, I'm no longer there, but so I think it helped Ubisoft actually to understand what we're doing, to get a good feeling for Berlin, to know that Berlin is a good city for a gaming studio to be in. But for us, this was not so important. Of course, it was nice. We also exchanged with them from time to time. But because they are a PC console and Colibri is mobile, there were no big interactions.
Mm. Yeah, so let's move to your current firm then, BLN Capital. Tell us a little bit, what kind of projects do you invest in?
So to give you some background first, why does the company exist? And the reason for that is that once we sold the company, Janusz, Oliver and I were still running Colibri Games. So I mean, we sold early 2020, in January 2020, but we're still there until I think May last year. So there were 1.5 years where we had a full-time job. But the money arrived in our bank accounts and our backgrounds, like, so we never had any money really. So we didn't really know how this works. And then we decided that we want to invest that money together. And we realized we need people in the team that can do this full time that did it before. So with Beeline Capital, we hired a small team, like 4 or 5 people now, and they are working with us on the investment side. What are we doing? So we are, the interesting parts are startup investments. The reason for that is that I think, like, as I said earlier, that we in Germany and in Europe, we need more startups. I think if we don't invest more into the startup ecosystem, that in 20, 30 years, our wealth as a country will not be as it is today, because the value nowadays is mostly created by startups. If you think, like, for example, of the United States, if you think of the top 10 companies by market cap or by revenue, or especially by market cap, most of them are founded in the last 20 years. And if you look at the German DAX 30, or I think now it's DAX 50, if you look at this, most of the companies in there are founded like 50, 60, 70 years ago. And I think, I'm not sure if I'm right, but I think that SAP is the newest company in there, which I think is a shame, because it's like, it's not because it's not a good company, but because it's also 30, 40, 50 years ago. I don't know exactly how long that the company was founded. So I think we need more startups, and we need more really successful startups if we want to be able to compete in the future with the US, with China, with whatever other countries. And we do our part there by investing in the ecosystem. We do both gaming and non-gaming. Gaming, not so much, because there are not so many gaming teams in Germany that focus on free-to-play mobile. And non-gaming, we do different things. It's a bit more broader there, because our team has mostly background in non-gaming investments. So I think we're quite strong there as well.
So you would, in terms of games, that means that your portfolio will always be focused on free-to-play mobile?
I don't want to say always. Who knows how the future of gaming looks like in 5 years and 10 years. But so far, I think if you invest in a gaming company, you, of course, want to do a return on one side. And on the other side, you need to be able to understand how it works. And to be honest, on PC, we are, sometimes we invest on PC as well, but usually we don't understand enough to really judge if the game has the potential to be successful or not. On mobile, of course, we can do this. If you give us like some soft launch numbers, we will be able to see if the game has the potential to grow or not. So that's why we tend to invest more in mobile.
One of the people you were investing in already was a guest of the show, Nate. Of course, you also work with him at Colibri, so I assume that decision of investing into his company was easier because you already knew what he was up to or like working with him. But how would you describe yourself in terms of being connected to the companies that you invest in? Are you very hands-on, hands-off? How do you go with that?
So one thing I had to learn as an investor is that I think if you're too hands-on, you're not a good investor, especially not if you're hands-on, even though the team doesn't want you to be hands-on. So I see my role as investor to be on the sideline, but to be there if a team needs me. And this is usually in the form of like strategic questions, like how should we do certain things, but also in terms of like how to build up a game, how to build up a gaming company, what kind of people to hire, like those questions. But we're not going to log in into their Facebook account and start doing user acquisition. So that's not our role.
No, but, okay, yeah, that I understand. But usually I would assume that we always hear in those let's say TV shows or whatever, like Shark Tank or whatever, or in general in talks about this, we always hear about like dumb capital versus smart. So I assume that in the games that you invest in because teams will also look for somebody who has experience in that area.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's why most people choose us to work with. And for example, I'm not sure how public this is. So but at the same time, I think smart money doesn't mean that you do their work. They still need to be independent. They still need to do their own decisions, but you are able to like point them towards the right direction. You need to be able to give them feedback if you think something is not going well. At the same time, I think a lot of dumb money investors actually hurt the company by not understanding what they're doing and then by basically giving them wrong advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those were my questions about the whole investment part. And I know that Simon wants to come in and have a few questions. So I'll give over to him.
Sweet. Yeah, I have some questions. I mean, we're talking a lot of facts and so on. I think it's very interesting. I think it's especially interesting because you're quite a young dude. All of you dudes, as you like to call yourself. And I'm curious about a bit of meaning, you know. You have like completed a pretty significant cycle in your life, I would say, from, you know, studying, founding, and then great success. And then I guess very broadly, and we can narrow it down, kind of looking for the essence here, what does that mean to you? You know, I guess you kind of talked about that you were kind of looking for the success, kind of wanting to make something big. You made it big. Why did you want that? How important is that to you? And so on and so on.
Yeah, good question. Why did I want this? Actually, I don't really know. I think it's maybe because of the fact that my family, we never had a lot of money. So basically, I grew up, like we were not poor, but I grew up knowing that money is always a limiting factor. And like most of the fights that my parents had were about money and about like related things. So I understood that money can be a big limitation in life, and that's what I did not want for myself. So I wanted to have the freedom to basically base my decisions not on money, but on what I want to do. And luckily, I reached this point now, so I can basically decide if I want to work or want to not work and how to spend my time. At the same time, though, I think it's also a responsibility to kind of give back, to do the right things, to invest in the ecosystem, to help other founders, to, like as I said earlier, to make sure that Germany as a country is still successful in 20, 30, 40 years. And so that's what I'm now mostly thinking about, like how can we make sure that the gaming ecosystem, that the startup ecosystem is successful? How can we make sure that there are more companies founded? And actually, one would think that the number of started companies is going up, but it's not the case. There are less and less companies founded every year in Germany. So yeah, that's what I'm thinking a lot about.
Okay. So you were looking for freedom?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. And do you feel like you have it now? Because there is a, you know, like you said, let's say money alone is not necessarily freedom. I mean, now you are with what you gained, you also have a huge responsibility, right? You're now thrown into a level of thinking that you said that's pretty large. Like you're talking about Germany as a whole and stuff, which you can because you're like quite a significant mover now. Do you feel like you want that? Are you happy with the situation you find yourself in?
Yeah, I like the situation, but at the same time, I also miss founding companies. So maybe I will go back to actually like go back to zero at some point in the future and start a new company. There are no plans yet whatsoever, but knowing myself, I understand now that what I like is building things up.
Yeah. What's the most important things there for you? What do you like most about that, or why is that important to you, you think?
I think that's, it goes really down to like character, I guess. So even when I was a kid, when I played games, I always liked playing games where I built something up. I even invented my own board games based on Monopoly, where I like became more and more successful. And like, I think this kind of thinking was always in me. So I'm not sure why, but now after like Kulibri Games and so on, I recognize that this is one big part of my character, and this is what I enjoy doing.
I'm actually curious, what were your favorite games, or what games did you grow up on?
So games like Age of Empires 2, that one I played a lot, Command and Conquer Generals, I think there was one game like called Cossacks.
Cossacks, yeah.
The first game I played, like when I was like, I don't know, 11 or so, 10, 11, but I played this then, every time my parents let me play, I played this game. Of course, I also played like different games like shooters and so on, but those were the games that I really stuck with.
Did you play any StarCraft?
No, but I played Warcraft 3, so kind of like the casual version of StarCraft, I would say.
Yeah, depends on what you're into. Not casual on the micro front if you're taking it seriously,
yeah,
I guess.
That's true.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, well, this is always interesting to me. You know, I think there's this big question that like in like kind of popular or like meme psychology is asked, right? You have like, okay, so what do you do when you have all the money in the world, kind of like? And there is also an element to that that's kind of like this hero's journey thing, when you've like, that's why I mentioned completing a cycle, you know, you kind of went and you got the gold from the dragon, so to speak. And then the question is also, now what's your next cycle, right? Now you're like operating on another level. What do you do with the time you've won? Because, you know, time might be money, but money is definitely time. And you have like, basically, yeah, you're not, what happens to me at least is like time gets kind of differentiated from money. You don't, like you said, you don't have to think, argue, or quarrel about money so much. And then it's always the question, what do you do now? How do you give back? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, those are the big questions. As I said, like one thing we do is investing into the ecosystem, supporting the ecosystem also. So not only by investing, but also by helping teams, even if we don't invest for whatever reason, because they don't want money or because we think it's not feasible from a financial perspective. So just giving back on one side, but on the other side, of like as I said, thinking a lot about should I start a new company or not. I can imagine that I will eventually do this, kind of like start the cycle again. We're also still quite young, so there's enough time to start another successful company for sure. But yeah, I myself don't have the answers to those questions yet.
Yeah. Did you ever think like you wanted to take a break or something? Or are you like happy to run with this new cycle of, well, you have a new cycle of Berlin Capital or BLN, I don't know what you like to call it, where you give back. And but did you ever feel like you want a break for introspection? And I'm not saying you should. I think it's different for people.
Yeah, so to be honest, like now we have the team at BLN, which means that we have much more flexibility with our own time. So at Kulibri Games, we did basically not much besides working and doing work-related dinners and so on. Now, of course, we have this. So I spent much more time with friends, family, sports, and so on. So I did have a lot of time to like think much more and much deeper instead of like just working basically to build the next update.
Yeah, I see. I see. And I guess I kind of also I'm curious about, you know, you said you learned a lot of lessons from books or externals, which is kind of like this crazy advantage that, well, like, I guess we we always had the clear advantage for those who read. Yeah, great German saying. And you're giving that back with your book. What do you, you know, do you want to talk to us a bit about kind of like the key lessons for you? I have on my mind, you know, the general thing of mach kein Quatsch / don't be naive. And then I also had this question on my mind throughout the conversation you had with Florian now, when you talked about your first failed game and kind of the waterfall thing you did. And maybe you can talk a bit about like, maybe you can universalize a bit, you know, how to approach problems, like making a game is basically a huge set of problems, as opposed to going like, because sorry for going long on this, but because I think there is this conflict of you are a visionary, whether you're a kid or young or middle age or whatever, and you still have this vision, you want to do something, and you see big things, right? I think you guys had this too. You saw something big. And I think there's a challenge in how to make it small and like to not be naive and not do stupid things. And I feel like this waterfall and maybe like versus a direct, more direct week by week problem solving approach metaphorizes this quite nicely. And I'm curious what you think about this, how you would kind of do the negotiation between vision and execution.
Yeah, that's true. So I also see it this way. Of course, you need to have some ideas where you want to go, but at the same time, you need to make sure that you're actually able to deliver something. And the way we did this was we basically reduced what we think is the value of Idle Miner Tycoon and built it in an MVP, so minimum viable product or a minimum viable game, within 2 months, where we really removed everything or did not implement everything in the game that is not immediately necessary to find out if people like this core of the product. So, I mean, in gaming, there are so many things that you know that there are inner purchases, you know, inner purchases roughly, you know how they work. There are translations, there are different rewards, daily rewards, and so on. There are so many things that you don't need in your first product if the goal for the first product is just to find out if people like what you're doing or not. So reducing your vision to what actually differentiates your game or your product, to generalize a bit more, to basically reduce it to what gives your product a reason to exist is the key, I think. And then by doing this, you save so much time. And then you can test this by releasing it or by doing some soft launch or whatever, however you want to test this. But I would say this is the way to go forward instead of building a huge product where you spend so much time building features that you don't even know if people ever will use it.
Do you want to give some examples how this MVP came about? What all the stuff you cut out, like some examples?
Yeah, so basically, to tell you what's in. So our idea was to have a idle game, which is based on a mine, which is a kind of simulation game. And so everything we did was we had this, or even to go one step further, after I think 2 weeks or so, we had an internal prototype without any graphics, just like boxes for the miners in the elevator. And we played it and we realized it's actually fun. So We kept playing the game, even though it was so raw, so simple. And then, of course, like to test launch it, you need some graphics at least, and you need a bit more like explanation and a bit more UI. But the whole first product was all about this experience of like digging for coal and then bring it to the elevator. The elevator brings it up. The guy on the top delivers it, and you earn your money, and then you reinvest your money, and the next time it's faster, bigger, more. and kind of like closing this loop again, again, again. And this was all that we focused on in the first MVP. And there are so many, if you look at Elementic, no, after 4 or 5 years of updating, it's obviously a huge game with so many different features, so deep structures. But back then, it was all about this core loop of digging up coal and improving your mine.
Right. And do you want to say something that you, I'm sure there are many things, negations always can take up infinite space, but some things, for example, that you cut, where you were like, this is great, and then you were like, mach kein Quatsch, yeah.
For example, we didn't do any translations or localization in the game, even though we knew that if the game will be successful eventually, then we need to implement the framework, and it's probably more work to implement the framework later. But we're like, it doesn't matter, we will just like hard code basically the words in English into the game. And then if we know that this works, then we can still fix it later. And we did not have any in-app purchases in the game because building an in-app purchase economy is a lot of work and you need to really balance it and so on. For us, this was not the core of the first game. We just wanted to know if people actually enjoy the game. And we imagined that if they enjoy the game, then we can add in-app purchases later on. So a lot of those things that are really important for a game, I think you can still just do it later if the first stage of the game still works without it.
And any personal like darlings that you killed, like anything that you, I don't know, or one of your homies would have liked to have seen, but you were like, no, mach kein Quatsch, we can't do that.
So it's not exactly a darling, but to add one other dimension, if you release the game early, you get feedback very early and you're able to develop the game based on what your users want instead of what you want. And to make it more concrete, we always imagined the game to have one mine and then become more complicated, like add more features within that mine. And then we played the game. And as I said earlier, there a lot of people finished the game within like 1, 2, 3 days. Because it didn't have a lot of levels. And basically, all they told us was that they want another mine. So they want the same thing again. And in our mind, it was always like, kind of like, we need to do it more complicated, more complex. And then we realized they just enjoy this core loop so much that they want more of it. And this was a crucial decision for Idlemire Tycoon, because now, as you maybe know, it's like there are multiple continents, many, many mines, and so on. And we realized that what the people want is just the core loop again and again. And what we imagined the game to be like is just a more complex core loop. And now in hindsight, it really makes a lot of sense the way we did it. And if you think, for example, of Candy Crush, there's just like, there's always new levels. And of course they are a bit different, but it's always about another level, another level, another level. And I think if we would not have launched the game so early, we would have done this wrong and then the game wouldn't have been so successful.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, this is for me right now very personally inspiring, because I'm like, I have a bit of this visionary illness and it's sometimes really hard to find this focus, you know, like I'm really thinking right now. You're really making me think. I'm like, man, I need to take some notes on and like cut a lot of my ideas down, you know? I don't know. Was this hard for you guys, or did this come quickly to you when you realized all this? I'm wondering if you went through kind of like a struggle battle on that, or if that's just your, like you said, your character, or you just also got lucky with the people constellation. Sorry.
I mean, of course it's hard. And with the first game, we learned our lessons the hard way that we shouldn't approach it like the waterfall way of building something big first. And it's especially hard if you go more into the details, because the examples I had, they were kind of like easy to decide that we're going to add in the purchases later, for example, localization later. But if you think more of the core loop, then it's more like, okay, so this character, do you want to build in the animation or not? Do we think it's worth it to delay the game release by one day to have this animation? Maybe it's not, but then again, you have like 100 of those decisions that are all like take one day more or less. So where do you do the cut? Which ones do you actually build in and which ones do you not build in? However, I think that it's always better to be on the faster side, because on mobile, you can always improve things later on. And there's also, I think it's from some US VC, maybe A16C, I forgot, but there's the saying that if you're not ashamed of your first version of your product, then you released too late. Basically saying it's totally fine to build a game that you, to release the first game version where you know there are a lot of bugs, where you know there are a lot of things you need to improve. And if you release the game when you think it's good, then it's too late.
I understand. I would, the word that I, or the like phrase that comes to mind for me is like optimize for publishing. You know, I'm around a lot of philosophers, writers, I don't know, people who offer education or whatever. And that applies as well. You know, if you're like, yeah, it's easier to publish the stuff that you've thought through and that's like very, that has power to it as well. But if you want to be cutting edge and fast, then you have to get ready to be ashamed of it, huh?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Okay. What to kind of bring us slowly towards our close, you said in the very beginning that you wanted to support the gaming ecosystem now, specifically in Germany, maybe in general. I think with the kind of storytelling you have here, you are, I think it already has a lot of potential for support and encouragement. But give us your line on that, please. How do you want to support people? What's kind of your call? Why should people approach you, come to you? What do you want to help with now?
So there's not one way. I think that the first part is always inspiring people to start something on their own. And like, again, one of the reasons why we wrote this book, I hope that maybe a few gaming studios will be founded because they read our book and are like, okay, let's do it. So just starting the company is the first thing. So if people have any questions about that, happy to help. But then, of course, it goes deeper, like what we talked about in the podcast, what strategy to use, what business model, what kind of game to build, what should be the release process, kind of like when should the company release. Helping with those things, of course, also helping with investments if it makes sense. However, it's really, really hard to invest in a company that doesn't have a product yet, to be fair there. So we usually tend to invest after they have a product, but before or when they need the money to basically grow the company or scale marketing and so on. I think that, but the most important thing is in the end, just to get people to start building their own gaming companies or building their own games.
And what do you think is most needed for that?
I think just the courage to do it. I think most people could actually do it, but they are just too scared of it or don't know where to start and so on, or overanalyze. I have a lot of friends, mainly people that work in consulting, that are like, yeah, if I find the right idea, then I will start my own company. And then they analyze for 2 years already what is the right idea to build a company with. But I think the world doesn't work this way, especially not the startup world. I think the startup world works by just doing things and then figuring out what to do exactly later and being flexible, being oriented at your customer and pivoting your idea if necessary.
Yeah. How do we give people courage?
Showing them that it can work out well.
Yeah, it can, right?
But of course, it's also, so it's always risky, and it's naive to think that everybody will be a successful founder and that every game will be successful. There's always risk involved. The way how we approached it was that we told ourselves, and I told myself, if I just keep going, if I learn every time, if I get better every time, then eventually I will be successful. It's just like kind of like, how many shots on goal do you have? And if you become better with every shot and keep shooting, eventually you will hit.
Is this logical approach for yours, that there's there also faith in that?
Both, of course. I mean, you can still be unlucky, but if, like, most founders are not successful with their first company, or a lot of founders are not successful with their first company. Most gaming companies are not successful with their first game. I think whenever luck is involved, having multiple shots on goal helps, of course, with that. Especially if you become better every time and learn all of your failures.
Yeah. And then I guess last question, I don't know if it's a good last question before we go to our essential questions. A Germany thing on this? Do you think there that we need a bit of a culture change in Germany to... Yeah. Because I think there's where the faith comes in, because I feel like Germans have a lot of faith in job security, not a lot of faith in freedom, almost, in a way, often. That's a bit broad, yeah, but I'll let it stand.
That's very, very true. And I think this is one of the reasons why, for example, there are not many gaming companies in Germany. And so, I mean, we saw this when we, during our founding journey, where so many people that encouraged us to not build a company, but to go into consulting or whatever, because it's kind of like a secure way. I think in Germany, if you fail, you are looked down on, and this is not good. If you think of, for example, US culture, like, everybody encourages you if you fail when you try something, and they value that you tried it. In Germany, everybody would be like, yeah, it was, like, of course it didn't work out. Why did you even try? So that's a big issue in German culture, I would say.
Right. And then, okay, well, sorry, there's a bit of a joker in my neck right now, but don't you think then that mach kein Quatsch is, for somebody who's wants to encourage people, almost a little bit of a German title in that way? Or can you contextualize this differently? But
it for sure is. Yeah. We always meant it like more like in the, like in this way that you shouldn't do weird things. And I think it's still like, if you have some weird startup idea, it will most likely not work out. But you should still, you should try things, but you should also be smart about it, not naive about it, and not just build like the next local events app, because that's everybody's first idea on how to build a startup. And there's a reason why it doesn't work. So not be naive about what you do, but still do it.
Yeah. So like, do, you know, there's kind of this spectrum, huh? Like, be courageous, be maybe a bit naive in terms of, no, I believe that this is possible. No, I believe I can do this. Where, you know, maybe somebody might say, hey, mach kein Quatsch, like, get a real job. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, no, be courageous, do the thing. And once you do that, be real about it so that it works.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I guess that's a good thing to agree on. Well, that's great. And I think we have some essential questions for you. That might sum up our conversation a bit, or also maybe bring in one or two new aspects, and then we're done. Florian, are you still there? I am realizing I'm having a dialogue with Daniel. Hey, hi, how are you?
Yes, I'm still here. Yeah, I'm listening, and there were actually, your last question was a question that I wanted to ask, but then you did that, so yeah, I didn't have to jump in.
Nice, very nice. Well, essential questions then. Let's go through this. You can answer quick if you want to, Daniel. You can answer if you feel inspired longer. I think we're good on time. So are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Then my first question to you is, what inspires you?
It inspires me to see people that build something from ground up.
What would you say is the purpose of your being?
I don't think there's like a big purpose per se. The purpose that I myself decided to have right now is to try to help the German startup ecosystem.
What is a beautiful day to you?
Beautiful day is like getting up, getting a nice walk with my dog in good weather, working out, and then going to the office and work. And then maybe like have some social activity in the evening.
What is the change you want to see in the world?
That's a big question. I don't want to talk about like geopolitics and so on. The thing that I'm most focused about is on like making sure that we evolve the world by building new companies, building new technologies, making sure that the world moves forward. And I also am a big believer in that technology can and will help our world's problems in the future.
And how do you contribute to that change that you want to see?
By investing into the startup ecosystem.
Keeping it pragmatic, I see. For some fun, if you would start a new save game in your life right now, what occupation would your new character have?
It would be entrepreneur again, or founder. I think that fits myself really well.
And here's an interesting one for you, I think, and for us. What are your books that you like to recommend to people? Maybe specifically, I would ask you, because it already came up, what are the top three books that you would recommend to other founders that you want to encourage, notwithstanding your own, of course?
So it's really, really hard to nail that down. I think over the years, we read hundreds of books. I think one book that covers the startup idea phase very well is Lean Startup. It's already quite old, but I think it's the best book to understand how to actually approach how to find a good idea or how to validate your product, basically. Then there are like hundreds of kind of like startup biographies. Can't name any single one, but like basically about every successful company out there, there's a book, and just reading all those, I think, really helps a lot. Then there's one book, I'm trying to remember the name, Extreme Ownership.
This Tucker book, Willink.
Exactly. It's kind of like, I don't really like the military theme about it, but the lessons that that book has about like total ownership, about the fact that if you start a company, no matter what goes wrong, it's always your responsibility and you need to fix it and you can't just blame other people in your life. I think this really, really helps when you start a company.
Yeah.
Not find excuses, but everything that doesn't work in the company, you need to fix.
And I think it's also a great philosophy for life. I really value it. I still write a lot of my email bottom line, a lot of my emails bottom line first. Yeah. Like, I think that's really cool. Also gives you a good inspiration to be straight to the point. Sometimes not that easy for me.
Yeah. So moving on to the next question, which is a little bit in the same line, but what are your favorite games? Maybe also 1, 2, 3.
Idle Mind Tycoon, of course, the most favorite game. On PC,
do you still play?
I still play from time to time. It's more fluctuating now. Back in the days, I played, of course, every day, all the time. Now it's I pick it up when there's a new update.
Mm-hmm.
Not as much as back then. On PC, I would say Factorio. So basically, I think the ultimate entrepreneurship kind of game where you just build your factories up and it scales and scales and scales. On mobile, other than Atomatic, I don't have like one particular game. I always play new games and then I think it's the best game ever for like a half a year or so until I churn again. Right now I'm playing The Tower. It's kind of like it looks a bit niche, but it's a tower defense game, which I really enjoy.
Nice. Tower defense games should get more recognition again. Who is somebody from the games industry who you would like to get to know?
So I think I luckily over the years I got the possibility or the chance to meet most people. One person that like one example that helped us a lot was Ilkay from Supercell. The first time I met him, it was like crazy to meet such a successful gaming person. And he was always open, always helped us, and this was really inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Who is someone you know who you think we should have on this podcast?
Probably Jens from Wooga.
Mm-hmm. Can you say the full name?
It's Jens Biegemann. So he's the founder of Uber.
Yep.
And why? Why do you think we should have him?
Uber is the most successful gaming studio in Berlin. And I think it's really impressive on what he built, especially with the culture that they have, while still being, they have a super, like, I would say, nice culture while still being extremely financially successful, and building that combination, I think, is Jens did a really great job there.
And last question, where can people find you, meaning online?
On LinkedIn.
Under Daniel Stammler, your name.
Yeah.
Perfect. Anything you want to plug? Where can people get the book?
Amazon, of course. I think there are also like some local bookstores or in the local bookstores as well, but of course Amazon is the easiest way.
Will there be localization, or did you strip that from the process?
Yeah, let's see. So far not. Maybe we'll do it eventually. But the thing is, I think a book about a German company will never be successful in the US. So it will only be towards like the German Berlin gaming bubble, where there are English-speaking people. So we're not sure yet if it's worth it to translate the book.
All right.
I guess any last thing you want to say? Anything we missed or any essence?
If anybody out there wants to start a company, a gaming company, just do it. Find a team and just get going and figure out all the other things later on, instead of like overanalyzing and never doing it.
Very nice. Well, thank you for the encouragement, and thank you also for the inspiration. I have felt it, and I'm, as soon as we are done here, need to take pen and paper and write down some thoughts. So thank you very much, and good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel.
Hi there, Simon here. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear here, and you would like to hear more here, feel free to follow or to subscribe to the podcast on whichever platform you get your audio fix. We appreciate you, and we promise you to bring you many more insightful conversations with fantastic games industry guests from Berlin and from all over Europe. Thank you very much, and see you very soon. Bye bye.
Hi there. Before you go, this is Florian, Project Manager for GamesNet Berlin Europe. If you want to stay connected to the network, find out more about upcoming events and links to other MediaNet initiatives, you can visit us at gamesnetberlin.eu and subscribe to our newsletter. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, and until next time.